welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 281. Today we're going to be discussing Sense8, season 1, episode 11, Just Turn the Wheel and the Future Changes. I'm Danielle, and with me I have two newbies this week. I have Caitlin, and I have Natalie. Hi, guys.
Hello. Hi.
It's like you're the kindergarten teacher.
Just corralling you guys.
Sorry.
It would be great. Yes, exactly. As always, if you would like to get in contact with us, and we really encourage you to do so, you can do so through quite a few ways. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr. We're at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also come check us out on Podchaser. It's like a cool, new-ish sort of podcast directory kind of website. I don't know. It's really cool for podcast exploration and discovery. So we're there. We're at podchaser.com/rewatchable.
I've never heard of this Podchaser.
Yeah, so. It's a new thing that I think it came out towards the end of last year. They're trying to make it easy to make, like, to help you find more podcasts you'd be interested in. It's cool in that you can not only rate and review podcasts, but you can do it for podcast episodes as well. So, like, if you're looking to get into maybe a certain podcast kind of comes on your radar and you're not sure which one to do first, which episode, it'll kind of show you which one is the best one, something like that. I don't know, just something we're giving a try, just to see if we can kind of build our Rewatchable family that way. So, yeah, no pressure. And so before we get into discussing this week's episode, I want to get into our fun facts, just so everybody can have a chance to get used to our voices. And so, Natalie, I'd like to start with you this week. What is your fun fact?
Me, I don't have it. I don't have any fun.
You don't have any fun? No fun whatsoever.
No fun. Okay, here's a fun fact. It is the epitome of a random fun fact. Did you know that freshwater stingrays, as in like little, you know, rays, not like a manta ray from the ocean, but that there are freshwater ones that live in rivers? And the ones that live in rivers are black with big white polka dots on them.
I did not know that.
I will tell you why I know this. I know this because I met some of these stingrays, or I saw them at least, in one of the exhibits at your aquarium, at the Chicago Shed Aquarium.
Ah.
And I have a pajama top that I'm wearing right now. Like, one of my sets of pajamas is a big black, it's a big black baggy top that has white polka dots, not necessarily based on the stingrays. Polka dots are just a popular, you know, print. But Leo and I will always constantly refer to this shirt as in, like, hand me that as my stingray pajamas because of this discovery. And I'm wearing that right now.
I like that fun fact.
If you ever go to that aquarium, you can look for the spotty stingrays and think about my pajamas.
I was really trying to figure out where that was going.
Very exciting. I'm like, yeah.
I just want to think about Natalie's pajamas, so I will go and take another visit to the aquarium. Caitlin, what is your fun fact? Or what color pajamas are you wearing?
I'm wearing a Falcons t-shirt.
Hey, there we go. Football season.
It's football season, but I don't want to talk about it. Because
I don't either.
Was not good. So my fun fact is I got my hairs did this week. And we put in some blonde and red for the fall, and I like it, and I'm very excited about it.
It's going to be like an autumn leaf.
Yeah, exactly. This is great for an audio medium, but
yeah.
I'm enjoying my hair nonetheless.
Well, I saw your photos on, I think you put them on Twitter, right?
I put it on Instagram and it went everywhere.
Yes. So I did see that and it looked really cute. So if anyone else wanted to make it a visual or get a visual of it from this audio medium.
There is an associated visual, yes.
There is an associated visual. That's where I was going.
Link it in. You can link it in the show notes.
Check out Caitlin's hair.
Writing it down. Check out Caitlin's hair. Done. Okay. All right. So my fun fact for the week is that by the time you're listening to this, Karen and I will either be on our way or touching down in London, which I am so excited about. We're going to be there for about a week. And we have quite a jam-packed schedule. Karen doesn't know this yet. and it's going to be great. And I am super excited. And hopefully we'll be seeing Mai when we're over there. Mai and Danya is the plan.
What are your plans aside from that? Like, do you have any, you say you have a jam-packed schedule.
So
tell me some of the things that are on it.
Sure. I'm a big planner. While I'm not, it's not like a hard and fast schedule. Like, I don't want to plan every minute of every day, but like, I want to know certain things that maybe I'm going to do each day. So we're not staring at each other being like, well, what do you want to do now?
And that's valid,
you know? So it's a nice mix of like the touristy spots, such as like the Tower of London. And I really want to go at least to the Globe Theatre to at least like have a drink there or check it out.
Have you been to London before?
I have. I was there. It was at the beginning of a month-long trip that I took 2 years ago. And so I was
jet-lagged. With the tour group, right? Mm-hmm.
I was jet-lagged and I didn't know anybody on my group. So I wasted a lot of time when I was in London and didn't get to see a lot beyond like some of the touristy things. And Karen has never been there. So we're going to make it a mix of like things that she hasn't seen that I've maybe seen a little bit. And then things that neither of us have seen. So again, lots of the touristy things. I really want to go to like a 1940s themed bar. I'm trying to make that happen. Bunch of different food places. We're going to the Harry Potter studio tour. Yes.
Do you want me to give you the address of the pub they use in Captain America with the Winter Soldier, like the Howling Commandos pub?
Yes, please.
Because I've been there.
And I forgot about that.
You will lose your mind.
Oh, yes, please.
The Globe is also not expensive, by the way. Like, if you actually want to see a show there, there are a couple of the seats that are a little bit more expensive. The standing room tickets are usually £5. Though last time I stood with Karen for a prolonged period of time, she fainted. So, you can definitely see shows there. Like, it's very cheap.
Yes, I was looking at it and I was debating on the standing room, but like my back, I have a bad back. And so sometimes it gets a little achy.
It is pretty harsh. Like it is very medieval, but the pub, you will lose your mind.
Please do.
I will send it to you after this. Remind me if I haven't already.
Okay. Yes, I will badger you about it so I can put it on my Google Doc.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I'm going to London and I have a Google Doc, and if anyone wants to follow along, I have no doubt that I will be posting about it on Instagram and Twitter. So it's going to be great. I just got to get there. Got to get through a couple more days of work and then I'm done, which will be nice. Okay. And so that was our fun facts. Super quick and easy, but I want to get into this show discussion because while it wasn't as jam-packed as last week's episode, there still are quite a few things that I definitely want to talk about for this one. But before we get into our discussion, here is a quick show synopsis for this episode. In this episode, Cassius defeats some gangsters with this sensate's providing backup, and Will and Nomi worry over Riley. Meanwhile, Sun finds out some devastating news, and Kala begs Wolfgang not to do something very stupid. Sounds about right. But let's start with not Kala or Wolfgang, but let's start with Riley, because she is very much towards the center of this episode, but literally unconscious for the majority of it. So basically, most of what we see of Riley is her laying in the hospital. She had just fainted at her father's concert. And now she's sort of going in and out of consciousness. She's seeing visions of her husband and then that woman, Ursa, who like kept calling Riley a witch or something like that. That woman who was just very mean.
She was cursed.
Yes, made Riley think that like everything was her fault.
Go
ahead.
Did we actually see her in the hospital in reality or just in a vision of Riley's nightmare dreams?
Ursa?
Yeah.
I took it as Ursa was not physically in the hospital.
I'm very bad with this reality, reality grasp, but yeah.
Yeah, I think she was not there. I think Riley was... I could be wrong, but I believe Riley was imagining both, or both were in her head, whether or not they were imagining.
Ursa have visited her?
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was a visit or if it was a hallucination. I think it was a visit, just from the way that Ursa kind of reacted to her. Mm-hmm. But, yes. So, that was unpleasant. And she was still... blaming her, even though Riley had like this terrible thing happen to her. I don't know. It was rude. The whole thing with Ursa and also with Will and Nomi kind of going in and out and visiting Riley made me think, how is it that they can all visit with Riley when she's supposedly unconscious? Did this bother anybody or even register? It's not something I noticed previously, but during this watch, for some reason, I was wondering how they were able to kind of visit with her and see everything going on around her when she was supposedly unconscious.
Yeah, I guess it's less about like their actual mind and more about like I think that proves that it's more than just a mental thing. It's like that they can still be near her even when she's not conscious. It's like she's not imagining them. Like once the connection's there, I guess they can do that. I don't know. But it is a little bit confusing, but yeah.
I guess I didn't assume one way or another whether consciousness mattered, because I mean technically like while you're unconscious your brain is still working. We know she's dreaming because she has imagines the car. So if I had to work it out would just be as long as like the brain is still firing, then they can visit.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's kind of like what I was thinking too when I started questioning this, but I wasn't sure. So yeah, that's a great point. And you kind of brought up that we see more flashbacks to the car and the night she was driving with Magnus. Are these flashbacks getting annoying because they haven't been resolved yet? Or are they just really piquing your interest as to like what actually happened?
I'm just gonna say it just feels like we're seeing like the same thing over and over again.
I am not sure in regards to the purpose of it. Like, how much do we know so far about? Well, like, yeah, she crashed the car, and then the baby, like, she apparently went into labor, and the baby died, and the husband died. Like, is what more to it is that? Like, I understand the repeated trauma, though it doesn't really seem to be, like, feeding into her relationship with Will. Like, oh, no, I can't because I have grief about my dead husband. Not that necessarily should be something that feels, but, like, it hasn't really seemed to factor in and you know, she hasn't told Will, presumably. Like, she spoke about it with Taffius, but she didn't tell Will. So I don't know. Like, I'm not surprised that she has ongoing trauma about it, but I don't know if it's meant to be related to her being hunted as a sensate or whatever, you know?
Yeah, it seems like they've revealed a lot of like what has happened to her, but it's still almost making it look like you don't know everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I forgot that her, even when she starts getting flashbacks and all that kind of stuff, that her story really still does move slowly with this, or like doesn't get discussed as quickly as I thought, but you still get a really good sense of what's going on at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But in connecting it with possibly it being a cause of like her being a Sense8, we see yet again doctors noticing something off about her brain scans, and they kind of discuss it with themselves. So then it should be of no surprise that, I'm just going to kind of jump around a little bit, but it should be of no surprise that we come to find out that Whispers knows where she is, which isn't good, partially because she's unconscious for a lot of it. And on another continent from at least two of our senseis who have gone through this already. So yeah, not good.
I mean, I guess the main lady was right. She was warned,
Yeah.
What I'm confused about is that when Jonas was talking to Will and Nomi, he made it sound like Whispers knows where Riley is because of Jonas's connection to Will and Nomi, than their connection to Riley. So what does that have to do with her going to Iceland? Like, that makes Iceland dangerous. Wouldn't that like have been inevitable at some point anyway?
My impression there is that they seem to be heading up the research facility for the BPO there. That might be totally not right. Like, maybe I totally mixed that up, but it seemed to be that that was like she was closer to the threat. Even though they came for Nomi, like, in her home city and did it in a normal hospital, it seemed maybe Iceland is like the... She's literally going to like the center of the storm, but I might have totally got that wrong with what Ursa was saying about her being experimented on and stuff, because I now don't know.
I feel like it's okay to not know. Just because, they make it really unclear. I can't say whether or not, just because I kind of know how it works out, but that's an interesting observation. And so talking more with Jonas, we get this moment with him, and yet again, it's kind of like, do you trust me now? And Will and Nomi are like, yes, we trust you. But then he kind of turns around and tells them that he's telling their secrets to Whispers.
Well, that's the thing. I still can't work out what level of innocence there is here. Like, what level of innocence on Jonas's part? Like, he is being kept there in with the head, head zappies and stuff like that. And he is, we see Whispers being like, now don't say too much. They won't believe it. And I cannot tell if they're consensually working together, or if Jonas is being forced and is trying to say hints to Will and Nomi for their own self-preservation, if you know what I mean. Like that Whispers has Will, but are they consensually Whispers has Jonas, but are they consensually using that connection to hunt the team together, or is Whispers telling Jonas to do one thing and Jonas is doing another? We can kind of see that Whispers can see what he's saying out loud, but not, I guess, no. When he goes to Will and Nomi, it's happening inside his head. Jonas is not saying it out loud in the room, is he?
Right.
So when Whispers says, tell him this, if Jonas visits them rather than them visiting him, Whispers cannot physically hear what Jonas is saying to them. Is that right?
I believe so. But I'm trying to think. Even the science, it still confuses me. But even if he can't hear it, I'm not sure Yes, no, Whisper shouldn't be able to know what's going inside, because even though he has access into Jonas, he doesn't have access into Jonas's like thoughts and everything, because they are not in a cluster together.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So yes, so if Jonas is visiting elsewhere, Whispers doesn't know exactly what is being relayed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think at some point Jonas would have to report back with what their reaction, what Will and Nomini's reactions are, both perhaps physical and verbal. And so Jonas, I don't think, would have enough time to make up a lie, unless he was that great with lying about what they would say. So there has to be some, he does have to, I don't think he can hide as much as he would like to, because Whispers is right there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of like head games type things. And he said, she said, but to a different level where we can't really see what is being said or conveyed.
I have the hardest time with Jonas because I feel like, even before now, he's always making things more complicated and tricky than they need to be. Like, he never says what he means, even when he was, like, on his own and free. So I've never been able to, like just say what you mean, dude.
Yeah.
He's not spelling it out. I don't know.
He's getting more and more frustrating. I remember even the first time I was watching it, it was less of a, is he a good guy? Is he a bad guy? But more of like, why is he just so frustrating? Like, why, like you said, why is he intentionally speaking in riddles, even in times where he doesn't have to?
So the plot can continue.
Yeah.
Which is just makes it annoying, because you're like, wow, this would have, like, the thing with Will would have gone way smoother if he had just said what he meant, and then Will wouldn't have arrested him.
Communication? What?
Communication? No.
Nah, we're not doing that. Yeah. So that's a little bit frustrating. But I really also like the fact that like the interactions with Jonas are frustrating, and you can see that like he makes it so much worse than it actually should be or can be. And then when you do see the interactions between the Sensates within their cluster,
that's, you don't have to apologize every time you say it.
I think of you now every time.
I'll become desensitized, I'm sure.
Oh gosh. But their interactions are so much simpler, so much, they're just not as fraught with all these other things. Like Jonas brings a lot of baggage in with his visits, whereas when Will visits Nomi, it's very much, it feels more natural. And I mean, it's adorable, I think, when Will and Nomi kind of visit each other and end up visiting Riley together.
Yeah, I was very much, last episode as well, a big fan of like noticing, now that they're kind of getting to know each other a lot better, everyone, sort of to different degrees, the different dynamics that they fit with each other is really cute, like is really interesting. Like Will and Nomi's friendship is very like unique in a certain way compared to like Will and Wolfgang's. Like, you know, Will and Nomi are kind of have this proactivity and mystery solving kind of like buddy cop team up Nancy Drew, you know, situation together of you know, partners in crime or partners in not crime or whatever. You know, they're both like, what do we do? Here's the plan. Like, here's the puzzle solving. They're both involved in that. And then, like, different people have, you know, they just bring out different parts of each other in different ways that click. And Will and Nomi's is a very interesting one to me. But, yeah, very, very sweet. And I like that Amanita's sort of just involved, like, on the side. Like, you know, that Nomi will like relay everything that's happening to her. It's, you know, very cute.
I find the whole show far more satisfying now that they're like interacting like very intentionally with each other.
I think that's the key word. I think intentional. Yeah. What's really opening it up.
Especially like Cepheus goes and just straight up asks for help.
Mm-hmm.
Like the intention and just the not, they're not surprised by each other anymore. They're just like, oh, hey, Cepheus. Oh, hi, Kala. We're in India, you know, just,
and
it's just so much more satisfying now.
It is. I'm still very much like, why do the people who are not in on the science, why are they not questioning it? I'm still frustrated by like, why do you all just accept that this is happening? But I do enjoy it. So yeah, like the ones who haven't filled in, you know, this is what's going on. Maybe they have, again, like I said, maybe they have a WhatsApp group. Maybe that's already established off screen.
Off screen. Yeah, it could be. Very well could be. But I think it's interesting now that they're all, like you said, intentionally visiting and interacting and with each other and asking for each other's help. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Will has his very first meeting with Kala in this episode, doesn't he? Like, we've never seen them interact directly together before, right?
When he goes to the temple.
Yeah, when he helps her in the temple.
I'm not sure.
Like, where am I?
This is India.
Mm-hmm.
And then she asks, yeah, I think that was maybe their first meeting, though they must have conceptually known about each other.
Right. I just think it's interesting after this is what, episode 9?
Isn't it 11?
I did say that before, didn't I? Yes, episode 11. And there's still like our maybe perhaps that we haven't thought of, and Will and Kala is one. And I thought that was really interesting.
Mm.
Let's see. I also want to touch on, I mean, Will is visiting with Nomi, and like, they're very good at giving each other advice or like bouncing off each other. Like, Nomi puts a bolo out on herself. She doesn't even wait for Will's help with that. saying that she's apparently visiting you, Natalie.
Yeah, I know.
And
I wish we did have an Australian sensate in the team, like of all of the countries that they're in. Like, we don't need 4 Americans or whatever it is, 2 Americans. Can't we just have 1 American and then 1 somewhere else? But
no,
yeah.
There always has to be more Americans than anyone else.
I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah. But it is. Yes, I did. I like the way that they work together a lot.
Or like when Nomi has a knock on her door and Will's like, I wouldn't answer that.
Yeah.
I don't know. It wasn't like him being completely scared. It was like him giving brotherly advice almost. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I really do enjoy that dynamic.
Yeah, it's very easy and natural.
Mm.
Very much so. Like, they've gotten each other out of, like, really bad scrapes. And so they just work very well together.
Mm-hmm.
And the equipment that Bug is bringing over is going to help them work even better together.
Here he comes.
Yes. I love Bug. I probably haven't said that in a little while. Natalie, do you have feelings on Bug?
I think he's interesting. I was on the episode where we had his debut.
Mm-hmm.
And his dynamic with Nomi and is very interesting. I've seen a few people on the quiz that Brittany did about favorite characters, like, really like him as a side character, so I figure that he is, you know, a pretty positive character. But it was sweet, like a very nice, it was a nice gesture and a good example of, yeah, this kind of archetype of character, I think, and that people can be good and try hard and all sorts of things. And it's, you know, I don't know what he did to get in, you know, that, you know, Nomi got him out of prison. She took the fall for his crimes and she was a minor or something.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's really, really cute. And, you know, that's a really nice ally, even though he's a bit of a weirdo. But, yeah.
That was just so convenient. She's literally like, I don't have any equipment. Knock, knock, knock.
I found the explanation pretty good, though. Like as to why he would know that at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like that it wasn't just like, oh, hey, I have a couple extra in my truck just in case. It was, I saw that this happened. I know that this is what I sold you, so I wanted to check in on you. He is an odd bird, but his heart is in the right place, or he's always trying to help. And my favorite things is when he slips up and calls Nomi Mike and then looks at Amanita when he corrects himself, like, please don't hit me.
Yeah.
Because she,
but he also did it fairly well, like in terms of, he corrected himself and was like, and he didn't like make a huge big scene about it.
Yes.
After that. Yeah.
It's more of like an, just like, this was just my habit. I'm completely accepting of you as Nomi. It's just like, I need to work at this. And you can see him trying, which is
incredible.
So, I know that we covered three characters sort of all at once there, just because they were so very much entwined. But any other words about Riley, Nomi, or Will at this point? I think they were the emphasis on like the BPO stuff.
Yeah. Just that Will is very dedicated to Riley already, which is fine, but, you know.
Yeah, because we get that shot of them towards the end of at least, like, the stuff with Will, where he's sitting by her bedside holding her hand.
Yeah, when, you know, Nomi's telling her, now Nomi's telling Amanita, like, what's going on, and that, you know, she's seen Riley, but that she's not alone, and then Riley's sad dad, and cut to Will, aww, you know, in there comforting her.
But he's been sitting outside her room playing his ukulele.
Poor dad. Like, can you imagine being on stage with this really big opportunity and like you're so happy, you're proud, your daughter's there, and all of a sudden you look up and like see her fall, or like you see this terrible thing going on?
He's just so delightful, and I just, every time I see him on screen, I'm like, is this when something's horrible is going to happen to him?
Oh, no.
Seriously, I feel like that he's going to get really in trouble in some way. So.
He's just too adorable, and bad things happen to adorable people on this show.
Yeah, no comment, but I do think he is adorable. I mean, the dads in this show in general, the ones that we do see are great. Most of them. Maybe not Sun's dad, but...
Mm. He's dead now anyway.
Sun's dead dad, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not Wolfgang's dad either. So basically I'm just saying that Riley and Kala's dads are great.
Kala's dad's really, really cool. Will's dad's kind of like a questionable up and down. And then, yeah, Wolfgang's dad sucks and is dead. And then Sun's dad kind of sucks and is also kind of dead.
Just a little bit. But before we get to Sun, let's talk about Kala. Because Kala takes her dad's, well, not advice, because he already kind of knew what Kala was going to do. But after talking with her dad, Kala tells Rajan, about why her father, or why his father, was visiting her at the temple. And I thought this conversation was really interesting in that Rajan, one, wasn't surprised, and two, was not deterred from Kala at all.
He is so dedicated. That's the thing. And it's just really funny, because, not funny, but like he's, you know, she's looking for every kind of out in order to be like a decent person, and, you know, not have a, you know, big scene, but like every single like easy out that is put forward, he is just so dedicated to getting back on track that it makes it so much more stressful for her.
Yeah, nothing is deterring him. Was this, so in that it's kind of part of his character. Was this surprising to either of you that he kind of took it this way and even doubled down on his loyalty to Kala?
No. Seemed about right.
Didn't shock me. Did not shock me, but yeah, it really, yeah, it didn't surprise me, but very stressful for I guess, nothing's going to get rid of this guy. And it's kind of depressing for her.
Well, it exacerbates my frustration with her because mm-hmm. we've talked about her problems are like her own making and mm-hmm. she will just not grow a pair of ovaries and break up with him.
Yeah.
Like, all this stress that she's causing herself is, like, all her own doing at this for so much of this. And that's what makes her a frustrating character to me. And this was her chance to have a nice, clean cut. It would have sucked, but she could have done it.
Yes, it makes me feel uncomfortable, like, now. So, yeah.
And she just doesn't do it.
No, and it makes it worse because we get Rajan, and he always tells her how much he adores her and respects her, but he threw in like that he wants to grow old with her and like he loves her no matter what. And he's very much looking at the long game and not just like, I love you here and now or like anything like that. He's very much looking way down the line. And it's unfair to him that Kala is looking at the moment and not even looking at it in that she wants it. I don't know.
Yeah, she's stringing him along, and everything we've seen of him makes him seem like a really decent, good guy. And it seems like he deserves more than she's giving him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the thing, and it seems like that she's keeping him around, like she's not breaking up with him, and it seems to be purely based on like she doesn't have a good reason for not feeling the way he feels, therefore she must be in the wrong, and so for his sake, she should kind of try and live with it, yeah, mm-hmm. because, you know, there's no... He hasn't done anything wrong to cause her to act like this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's something that we'll definitely still be keeping an eye on for a little while longer. But I thought this scene with just her and Rajan was relatively powerful because we haven't really seen them discuss anything like this previously. And then the other scene that we got with Kala was she goes back to the temple. She goes to visit and sees that Rajan's father has a sort of, there's like a memorial
shrine.
Shrine to him, even though he's not dead, at the entrance to the temple. And at first she thinks it's because they're just in general sorry
praying for him.
But then it sort of twists because they're saying how it was like God's will for him to be stabbed and like she is the savior because she brought him there. And I don't know about you, but the scene made me feel very uncomfortable. And also it was an interesting look at like how faith should be represented by Kala and how faith can be just distorted.
Yeah. They've definitely perverted Kala's faith.
And that's a pretty common, common conflict of, our faith says that we don't do this, but we're just going to take it into our own hands in order to preserve those core parts, if you know what I mean. Like, we're going to go against the ruling, we're going to go against the principles of the faith in order to follow the faith to the letter instead of like adapting to a more flexible and accepting principle following, you know, following all the way through. Because, yeah, that's just, you know, especially to put it on her as like that she, you know, saved them, like, you know, pinning it as something like that she had maybe intentions about, or that like she, or that like, you know, their God moved her to do, is just not very nice.
But then Will kind of takes over, which I'm kind of disappointed that Kala wasn't able to take charge. It's not all the way in her character to do so, but I was kind of sad that Will had to take over to get her out of it, or threaten them to make them leave. But it was pretty effective, though.
I found this super interesting, considering with the last episode, she has the discussion with Caphias about the world being violent. And she said, you know, she didn't used to think it was, and now it is. Now she does think that. Mm-hmm. And then, like, her body is used to threaten these people who just committed this near murder in front of her. And she's mm-hmm. just getting pulled further and further into this violence that she has just kind of expressed that she's discovering for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great point. Do we think that Will stepping in was something that she had wanted? Because obviously she felt threatened, or she felt stressed and scared. And so that, I'm sure, tipped Will off. But do you think that like that was a reaction that she was hoping for? Like when Caphias calls on Sun to help him out of places? Or was it just something that happened?
I think it was needed. Like, I think the I think that, you know, it was something that, it was kind of more to me like, you know, what, like Wolfgang and Lido, like that she needed help in a situation that she did not have the capacity to do herself. I don't think she's like, oh, that was wrong of you, to Will, or anything like that. In fact, she seemed, you know, I don't think that, you know, every woman is going to be like Sun in terms of,
oh, of course,
being a, an ass kicker in the most literal physical trained fighting sense. And Kala is, you know, strong in other ways, but I do think that she is someone who, you know, is very insecure and out of, you know, out of place in that kind of circumstance, and that it's okay for someone else to help her in that way. I don't think it's like, I don't think Will's level of violence is kind of like back off, leave her alone, is equal to what they did in the terms of the stabbing and celebrating the stabbing. But also remember, like, even though Will did it for Kala, to those people, it was still Kala doing it, like Kala shoving right. this guy up against the wall, which
we see a little bit of that too.
And it's to me, what was really enjoyable about that was that they're so, you know, they're so self-assured and stuff like that when they're telling her about like what were, you know, what they believe is right and what a hero she is and stuff. And then as soon as they get, like, the tiniest bit of threat, they're like, oh, no. And it's just, it's sort of an example of their weak moral fiber, I guess, like, that they are so easily, like, they're not even really dedicated to their cause. Not their cause, but, like, they're not even really dedicated to what they claim about those necessary movements of eliminating that threat, because those aren't the actual murderers, are they? They're just like the temple acolytes who, and it was like an even more fundamentalist group that did that to Rajan's father. And these people are very happy to have that happen, but the minute that they're actually asked to sort of stand up for anything or take anything into their own hands or be confronted with anything like an angry Kala, they totally fold. And it's just kind of an example of them being very weak, I guess, to me. And I kind of liked that, showing that they're weak and hypocritical and stuff like that.
It seems like that is the only type of thing they would, like, respond to. Like, if Kala had tried to make some kind of, like, theological argument about why that was wrong, like, they would have just been like, oh, no, it was God's will. Like, they were not going to be swayed by reason in any way. Like, it seemed like that was literally the only response that they would actually react and leave her alone.
And I just want to say, I'm not sure that they weren't involved in the stabbing because so many people were coming out of that temple to do that down those stairs. But I think it was the anonymity that they had, because you couldn't see who anyone was, that they were able to just kind of do it with just like the mindset, that like group mindset. So I definitely think your point stands, but I'm not sure that they were completely innocent.
I don't know if they were the instigators or not. Or if they were the instigators, they were the kind of people that, like, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but, like, they're not, like, an actual sinister gang. At least people, they're, like, people getting in over their heads, and then when actually faced with it, can't handle it. Like, they can't walk the walk, you know?
Exactly. So, yeah, so Kala's, in this episode, it was very much about her relationship with Rajan, her relationship with her gods and the people at the temple. And it was also very much about her relationship with Wolfgang. So we see her being pulled into Wolfgang's storyline a bit here, where basically after murdering his cousin last week with a bazooka, he goes, which amazing. Absolutely amazing. Did you like that, Natalie?
I loved the Wolfgang and Lido, like, team up. I loved it a lot, like, in both, both sides of it. So, yeah.
So great. So now we're kind of seeing the ramifications of it. Wolfgang breaks Felix out of the hospital and takes him to a new hospital, kind of bribing a doctor to take care of him and hide him while he goes to tie up some loose ends, meaning killing his uncle. Which it's so hard to see someone, now that we have more background on Wolfgang and we kind of know more about him, to see someone who, like, does have a soft interior just have to steel himself and do feel like he has to do these sorts of things just to kind of keep what he has. And when Kala confronts him about what he's about to do, because she knows what he's about to do, he says, like, this is who I am, and, like, I'm not going to change. This is what's going to happen. And it was just very hard for me to watch. How did you guys feel about kind of Wolfgang's path after killing his cousin and then Kala showing up before we see him do anything?
I find the juxtaposition of Wolfgang's story with Cafius is super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wolfgang, they're both trying to protect loved ones, Wolfgang with Felix and Cafius with his mother, but they're both with, like, death hanging over their heads if they don't do what they're supposed to do. Cafius is just completely unwilling and, like, goes to what he assumes will be his death, while Wolfgang goes on the offensive and is, like, murdering family members. So I'm not entirely sure what to do with it, but I do find it's fascinating that these two stories and the moments of these stories appeared in the same episode.
To me, it seems more like that Wolfgang believes that, like, this doing this, like, you know, killing his uncle or whatever, will be the end of the road for him, that he will be able to close the book on, like, his old life if he does this, basically. And maybe for some people that's true, but I feel like historically we don't usually actually see that work out that well, if you know what I mean. that we don't, that, you know, if he thinks if he can do this, then that everything will be like a clean slate. And I'm not sure that that's accurate.
Yeah, that almost feels like a element of hope. Are you saying that Cappius feels like if he does this, it'll be a clean slate, or Wolfgang?
No, Wolfgang.
Wolfgang, okay.
Cappius is kind of just like, oh, this is just what I have to do, like, mm-hmm. This is just where I am now. Wolfgang seems to have, you know, Wolfgang seems to have the idea that taking this path will be like a clean slate. You know, once this guy goes, then he'll just be able to run away after that. But if he runs away before that, like, that'll be chasing him his whole life. Whereas, yeah, Cappius's motivations are very, very different to that.
Yeah, I've never really thought about that juxtaposition before. So I think that's really interesting that you bring that up. They should feel similar, but like you said, Caitlin, it feels like Cappius is more on the defensive, whereas Wolfgang is more on the offensive. And I'm not quite sure what to make of that either.
It feels very intentional mm-hmm. to put those moments together. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure what to do with it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I will definitely be watching for that because I've never thought about that before. Mm. The only other thing that I wanted to bring up about Wolfgang, because he doesn't, as much as he does in this episode, it's very much a breather for him in between what happened last episode and what presumably will happen in the next episode. He does finally get together in a way with Kala, and they have their moment together. Albeit it's not in the greatest scene, in that she's basically begging him not to go murder someone. But we do finally get a Wolfgang and Kala kiss, which is kind of exciting, maybe.
I mean, it is, but I don't know if they're going to make it. Like, I feel like it's maybe something that, like, she wouldn't be able to live with
his decisions.
Yeah. No matter how they feel about each other, that she might have trouble reconciling, like, you know, being with him for the rest of her life with that kind of, like, past. But I don't know. Maybe
especially
not.
Considering she just nearly witnessed a murder.
Yeah. And, like, doing it in someone having had that past back in the day with nothing to do with you is one thing. I mean, it's still kind of crazy, but the fact that she's sitting there being like, please don't kill people, and then he's like, no, I have to, like, that might be something that she struggles with.
Yeah, or like, no, this is me, considering like we were talking about, considering her relationship with violence in the past, mm-hmm. and like, she's going after this guy who basically, that's how he solves his problems. Or that's kind of like what he sees himself as, is just a violent person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting. But we do finally see them get together. When Brittany had put down her favorite scenes and favorite lines before she was unable to make this episode, I think she said this was her, she can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think she said this is her favorite scene. And then she said, like, finally. So she was very excited about it. But yeah, it's an interesting relationship, especially with what both of them have going on in their own lives. It's something to definitely watch as we move forward, mm-hmm. especially into the season finale, which is the next episode, if you can believe it.
Hmm.
All right. Let's move on to Sun. She didn't get a lot in this episode either. Basically, she was summoned into a meeting room, and Jun Ki is there waiting for her to tell her that her father is dead. And Jun Ki kind of weaves this really interesting tale and is very emotional, but you can tell that he is lying out his ass. And basically, her brother killed her father, and she is angry.
So he actually did do it, or like, I wasn't sure if the father was even really dead. Like, I mean, we think he's, I don't know what's going on, but it, yeah, it feels pretty, the pretty way, dodgy in some way.
The way his face changes from like the pretend crying to just like sneering at her made it seem like he had done it for me.
Yeah.
Like, so, that was jarring to me.
I really hope that he signed the paperwork beforehand, the dad, that can still go through.
I think he was supposed to give some sort of, like, testimony, too, or something, right?
Maybe.
So, maybe not. I mean, surprise, surprise, things don't go Sun's way after things were looking up last week. Which is very sad. And just to see Sun be so angry. She gets in a few good punches on her brother's face, which was nice. But then
she's been wanting to do that for years.
Yes. Yes. And I mean, I am very happy for her. It was just really hard to watch her. For me, it was really hard to watch her throughout the rest of the episode, because everything that she does is so motivated and fueled by that rage and that pain that she has. I mean, she is awesome when she's helping Cavius, which we'll get to in a second. But then she has that quiet moment with Kala towards the end, and you can tell that she's just still, or not still because she should be, but she's just in so much pain. And you get more of her mindset at the end with that pain, and it just, I don't know, it was hard for me to watch. It's hard for me to put into words why, but how did you react to Sun's reaction, I guess?
Well, it's clear there's a lot of lost potential, because her father had just come around and seemed like he wanted to like build a new relationship with her moving forward. And I feel like had she learned that he was dead before all this, like his change of heart, she probably would have been less upset. But this fact that she was going to have this opportunity to almost start anew with him on like the basis of more honesty and genuine feeling, like there's a lot of lost what could have beens for her.
Yeah, so the brother is evil. I wasn't sure if he was going to have some big turnaround and become good, but now I think that he's going to be evil forever.
Hard to come back from patricide.
Yeah.
A little bit. And I mean, not only that, but you can tell he's just going to leave his sister in there to rot.
What a nice man.
Yeah.
All because he's too much of a coward to face up to everything he's done.
Well, he's selfish. He did everything for himself, so it made him feel good. Why shouldn't he be able to do that if he was able to? The worst. I hate Jinky. Yeah, so that's kind of what's going on with Sun. I wish we could gotten a little bit more of her this episode, because that was a pretty big bombshell. But at least we do get more of her in Cafius's story, which I really want to talk about. Especially, I'm really glad that you could make this one, Caitlin, because I know how much you love him. And he got so much of the emphasis in this episode. We see him in a relatively emotional short scene where he leaves Amundi with Jella. And like, Jella takes one look at the girl, hears her name, and like, he knows what's going on. And instead of really trying to talk Cappius out of it, he knows he has to do it. And so he just kind of supports him in any way that he can. Because Jella is great, you guys.
That's nice.
He's such a good friend. But also, Cappius is kind of not stupid, because I don't think I would have been able to do anything other than what Cappius did. But when he goes up against the gang, and when he is standing there in front of the leader and is telling the leader to like settle this like men, and just stands there as like, that guy could have taken him down so easily. even though I knew it was going to happen, I was very stressed. How do I want to say this? Did this kind of go down in the way that you kind of thought it would? Was it stressful for either of you to watch?
I mean, in general, that much gross violence is stressful. You know, with people's hands being cut off and all of that kind of stuff. And then Silas, the fight and everything is just way more violent than I ever expected this show to be, regardless. But in terms of expectations, I mean, I did never think that he would, like, give up the daughter. That's not even a question. But what is interesting to me is the kind of sympathy that he has for Silas, even though Silas has probably done, like, a lot worse things than what the gang members want to get redemption on him for. Not redemption, but, like, revenge on him for.
Right, killing the leader's sister, probably a month.
Yeah, and I'm sure he's done many other, we know he's done many gross, you know, heartless things. But just because Silas, you know, and Cafius now know each other and that Cafius has these sympathies for him, it's interesting where the chips kind of fall here in terms of the motivation of saving Silas. Obviously, we don't want Cafius to, like, just become someone who cuts people's heads off. Like, there's a lot of narrative events in different books and movies and stuff where it's like, it's kind of like, think Harry Potter with Sirius and Peter Pettigrew in the shack. Like, I'm not saving your life for you, I'm saving it because I don't think my parents would want Sirius to become a murderer, like, just for the sake of you, you know, getting rid of you. Like, so is Cafius saving Silas and refusing to do that? You know, the question is, how much of that is a measure of Cafius not wanting to become a person who would do that full stop, and how much of it is actual sympathy for Silas, because even though Silas has done terrible things, he's sort of Cafius's question mark friend. Like, if you know what I mean.
I see it more as being about the daughter.
Yeah, that's kind of where I see it too.
Like, for her sake.
Yeah, that she, he sees how much Silas loves her and dotes on her, and he knows what it's like to grow up without a father figure, and I see him as not wanting Amundi to have to lose, you know, this parent who loves her.
Yeah, I think that as well. Like, that's kind of what I mean with the sympathies as well, that, like, just, like, because he knows that Silas has these qualities that are important to someone outside of the world Silas lives. It's kind of like, you know, but objectively, he's still done many, many, many bad things. But it's a very interesting moral quandary. You know, I wouldn't necessarily, well, no, I certainly wouldn't. Like, if someone was like, here's a machete or a gun, kill this person. This person's done all of this other stuff. Kill this person or we're going to kill you. Even if I knew that person was, like, outright evil, I still don't think that I could do that, because I just don't think that I could. So I don't know. It's an interesting motivator that, you know, Silas, you know, that Cafius, you know, takes down that whole gang with some, you know, some help, and that basically rescues Silas. And, yeah, doing it for Amundi's sake does make sense, but it is a big, big, complicated, like, ethical study, basically.
What was really, like, attention-grabbing for me was how pitiful Silas was. Like, he goes from this really towering, intimidating figure, and he is whimpering and shaking. You kind of, in fiction, expect, like, a crime lord to, like, hold their head up or whatever.
Retain his composure.
And he was, like, terrified and beaten up and just like the whimpering is what I kept noticing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he tells Caphias to kill him. Like because you know, they know that they were going to be like, we're going to make them kill Imondi in front of him. And he tells Caphias to just do it, like, not, you know, to kill him. So.
And in addition to his whimpering and just being cut down so much, the way that they were talking to him and about Silas the whole time through that scene really stuck out to me, even more so than a lot of the violence that was going on. They just like kept using feminine pronouns for Silas, calling him a bitch, referring to him as she, and just, I don't know why, but that struck me more than the violence. But then they get their asses handed to them by a woman, which is great. But yeah, just to see someone who was such a huge towering figure, like you were saying, was someone that everyone here kind of feared or left alone, to see him brought down to the point of like whimpering and crawling on his knees was really hard or just unexpected to see. So yeah, so then that whole fight goes down and Caphias helps Silas out of there. They survive it, which, I mean, there were so many gang members in that warehouse. And just seeing Sun go to town was amazing. Mm-hmm.
She needed the outlet.
Yes. Oh, 100%. She really did. And she just took them all down one by one. So Silas and Caphias leave, and they end up needing the help of another Sense 8 because the gang leader, Githu, I think his name is.
Yeah.
He follows them. And so then Will kind of steps in to help Caphias again, to the point where Caphias is able to get them out of traffic and kind of use his own awesome, handy skills to make it the rest of the way. So after having this whole warehouse battle, we go straight from that into a car chase. And that felt very Van Damme-like to me and sort of over the top. How did you feel about having the car chase right after that? And also the fact that they were shooting at each other with citizens around. And I was so mad.
I was looking for the collateral damage as like, he was on the bike.
I know. I mean, I understand that the head gangster would be doing it because he doesn't care about anyone. But like the fact that Caphias was shooting back, and like Caphias can't hit anything. He's not trained in that. Like, why would he shoot back if there are people on the street?
Mm-hmm.
That stressed me out, I think, more so than anything else.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that I cannot say that I was like looking for the collateral damage, because I don't really grasp the reality of violence in that way, but it was pretty bad. And I mean, it does raise the question of how kind of normal that is, I guess, like normal or not normal. Like, I don't know if this area, this city, is like regularly war-torn, if there are that many sort of gangs and slums and stuff, whether like public shootings and public violence is normal or not, but I don't know.
Yeah, it felt very much, I mean, Caphias loves Van Damme, and it felt very much like a Van Damme movie, because they don't care about that collateral damage either. And they have all of this action one after another, and then it ends with almost like a roundhouse kick, but like done by bus.
With the image of Van Damme, like, yes, looking like it kicks him off his bike. Oh yes. My God. It was the best thing ever. It was so cheesy and so
someone perfect. Was feeling very indulgent.
Someone really just wanted to put that in by the end of the season, and mm-hmm. they were able to, and it was great.
And I love that it, like, the one word that's front center is damn, so it's like damn. Yes.
That, yeah. So I said that out loud as soon as I saw that. I was like, damn, so clever. They did that on purpose.
There was definitely some parts, I can't remember if it was this episode or the last episode, that I was like yelling out loud at the television, like being like, don't do that, it's stupid. And
I did it a lot last episode.
Yeah. I did it big time last episode about Will kissing Riley in the park, because I was like, guys, you've already had this weird solo kissing, walking in on busted thing. Will, someone's going to look at you in the park and think that you're completely crazy. I was like, well, you've literally already been through this. What are you doing?
Making out down by the riverfront with just air. I mean, there are worse things going on down there. So we get basically the end of Cassius's drama in this episode. And he was able to bring Silas home to his daughter and come home in one piece, which you can see Jello is really relieved about, as I'm sure we all were.
That nod that they share at the end. I get the impression Silas has been irreparably changed by this experience. So I'll be interested to see what he does next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are they going to do with? Yeah, what are they going to do with him now? Like, just stash him in with them, or like, can he just be like, oh, I've changed now. No one's allowed to question me, or no,
don't at me.
Yeah,
don't come at me. I'm different now.
Basically, yeah, don't at me. Yeah, is that gonna be his life now, or like, is he ever gonna tell the daughter like what he did? Probably not.
They really lingered on her face when Silas came in all bloody and limping,
because obviously she would have probably never seen anything like that before. Like, you know, she just thought he had a normal businessman job and that they were rich, but you know, like,
she doesn't like run to him like, oh my god, are you okay? She's just like, what?
Yeah, it's a total world change, you know. Yeah,
because she's not young enough to not know, I guess, kind of her surroundings. She's of school age. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting, too, that she didn't just run to him. It's kind of like she was taking him in, understanding the gravity of perhaps what had happened, and then just kind of, like, looking for her father underneath all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is sort of the end of what Cassius's story had been building to. Satisfying, unsatisfying. I know we're interested to see where it goes next. But yeah, how do you feel about the wrap-up here?
I mean, it doesn't feel like a wrap-up because, like, where one gang falls seems like another one would just pop up. And seems like those issues would just sort of be eternal.
Probably.
Makes me think of Angel in that, like, they just live to fight another day, right?
Go slay some dragons.
So that was basically it for this episode. Like I said, I feel like last episode had a lot going on, and this one, aside from Cassius's story, really was like the calm before the storm of the season finale.
And there was no Leto.
So much so, yeah, that there was no Leto. I just imagine that he, Hernando, and Danny are like at brunch.
And like a bottomless, like a bottomless mimosa brunch for 3 days.
Yes. Basically. And just like cuddling each other for a few days because they love each other so much.
Yeah,
so lovely. But yeah, so that was this episode. It was actually shorter than most. This one clocked in at about 45 minutes. Whereas the other ones had been at least like 55, if not over an hour.
Yeah.
To the point where when I was watching this, it ended and I felt like there should have been more to it. I was surprised at when it ended.
But the last one felt so long. Like the last one felt for about, like I kept thinking it was going to end and then it didn't. Like, Not necessarily in a bad way, but it was just like, I really thought that 40 minutes had already passed and then there were like 3 more acts to it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's because like we had 2 sort of like Cassius size stories going on with both Leto and Wolfgang that they were trying to weave in. And yeah, it was a lot. So this one was very much like a breather, which was really nice. Well, let's move into favorite scenes and favorite lines. My favorite scene, not because it was a scene that I was excited about, but just because of the way that the actor portrayed his bad acting, was Junhee telling his story to Sun. Just the way that he was overacting and being emotional, but also just, he's a psychopath, man. And it was really... It was hard not to watch. Like, it was hard to look away. So that was my favorite scene. Caitlin, what's your favorite scene?
So mine comes out of Danielle's in that it was Sun beating the shit out of her brother and the gang and just getting that outlet she so desperately needed. She's been repressing a lot of rage and she got to let some steam out. And it was very, very satisfying to watch.
Oh my God, yes. So good. Natalie?
My favorite scene was probably Nomi showing, well, not showing, but like telling Amanita, like showing her the reveal of Will being with Riley in the hospital, I think. It made me soft.
Aww.
Yeah.
All right, and then favorite lines. Mine comes from Bug. So Nomi opens the door, and Bug goes, "Hello, angels."
And I loved that. I loved the "Hello, angels" line as well. Yeah,
Bug is just lovely, and I really liked it. Caitlin, what was your favorite line?
Mine was from Jella to Caffeus before he goes off to face his fate, and he says, "Van Damme always comes back."
Yes. Always comes back.
And he did. And damn.
And the part of that I really loved was actually when Jella is like, "I'll see you tomorrow," right? As in, like, you know, you better, like kind of the weight of that was very, very sweet. That I liked it a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
But that wasn't your favorite line?
No. No. So my favorite line was actually between Carla and Will after that fight in the temple, and Will says to her, "Thank you," and she says, "They'll be, I think he says, "They'll be back," and she says, "So will I," as in, like, "I'm not going to stop coming to my temple," except that, and then he says, "Well, so will I," like, in terms of, like, we're all in this togetherness. So I really loved that new special friendship. Like, that's a real big brother relationship. Like, I feel like if you had to break them down into different, like, relationship dynamics, like, Nomi and Will are like twins, I feel like. Carla and Will is like big brother and little sister, and obviously Carla and Riley is romantic, and then, you know, some of the other ones are like, there's just very different dynamics between all of them. And
Carla and Wolfgang
are obviously also romantic, but then, like, yeah, Wolfgang and Will are kind of like cousins who grew up in the same family, but in like a good way, not in like the toxic terrible way of Wolfgang's real cousin.
I was gonna
like cousins who are like in the same year at school, who kind of, you know, have become friends as well as family, and, you know, and have this kind of like partnership in that way. And then Lido and Wolfgang is one of my new favorite dynamics, because they're so different, but they fit, like, they're like a yin and yang in like a very good and healthy way that helps both of them. So I obviously, Lido wasn't here this week, but Carla and Will is a new fave, even though, you know, it is a bit knight in shining armor. That's not always a bad thing.
Yeah, I actually, that was going to be my favorite scene. That one was in contention when Will meets Carla for the first time, because I also really enjoy their dynamic. And I actually am enjoying Will's character more this time around, because before he felt very much to me like that knight in shining armor, like white savior kind of thing, but now it seems very much more Big Brother holding things together. And I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, I did love his scene with Kala because of that dynamic. And I think Big Brother, I think that's a great way to describe it, Natalie. All right. So those were our favorite scenes and our favorite lines from this episode. And we want to hear what yours are. So please come get in contact with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. You can come find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And if you're feeling nice, please come and leave us an iTunes review. The more reviews we can get on iTunes, the more that people will be able to find us. And then our whole cluster can grow and we can be one big, happy family. It's great. And if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes this week, then Karen will hack through government systems just for you. But I might make her wait to do that until after we go to London, because I really want to go to London and I don't want anything to jeopardize that.
You don't want to get stopped at the airport.
Exactly. I mean, you know, so selfishly, I'm going to have her hold off, but it will happen. I promise. And also, these iTunes reviews, apparently, according to Karen, help us with Rotten Tomatoes as well. So the more of them that we can get, the better chance we have of being on Rotten Tomatoes and having us reflected on there so that even more people can find us. So it's just like win-win-win all around. Yeah, so cool. And so we want to take a moment and do some listener feedback, because quite a few of you have gotten into contact with us. And so we want to start with this tweet from Nurse Brack. This is the Queer Place on Twitter. Natalie, would you like to take this one, please?
Yep. So this one says, from Nurse Brack, if you haven't already, I recommend checking out Sense8 Creating the World before moving on to season 2. It's a making of special that gives a great look behind the scene. Just search for it on Netflix. It should come right up. Well, I think that that sounds cool. How long is that? Have you seen this special before, Danielle?
I haven't. I don't even know if I knew it existed. I'm apparently a bad super fan. Yeah.
Interesting. Because if it is available and it's like, you know, 40 minutes long or whatever, you know, I don't know if it's worth doing a full episode about, like, it's a documentary. That could be an interesting, you know, interesting thing to add into the discussion, like what was learned there, or like if it gave us more context after watching it or something like that. So I don't know how long it is, if it's like a full hour or whatever, but might be worth either doing an episode about or doing a segment about on the next podcast, or not the next one, but after the finale.
I can look into it. I'm not sure if we want to do a full episode on it. I'm not sure how much is there. And also after the finale, you might not want to wait to get to the next episode.
Oh, is it a big cliffhanger?
I don't know. but yeah, no, I'll look into it. Okay. Caitlin, will you get the second tweet, please?
Sure. Emmy Foss at Emmy Classic says, catching up Rewatchable and the Pancake comment made me lol for several reasons, but also that is how pancakes look in Scandinavia, not your, aka the American style, thick, tiny ones.
Well,
what is this in response to?
I don't know what happened, but those are just crepes. Like in that episode with Riley and her father, that's a super common way to eat. Like, that's just a crepe, and the translation into English isn't always crepe. Crepe is just the French word. So that's a really common type of pancake, not those, like, hot cakes, like fat, thick ones. Filled thin crepes is super common, and I don't know if that was a cause for argument, but it's not that complicated.
I'm not sure. I don't think I was on that episode. I don't remember talking about pancakes and crepes. But, yeah. I like all kinds. Pancakes, crepes, flapjacks, whatever you want to call them, I will eat them. All right. So we have another tweet here. This is actually from my friend Eric Johnson. He says, tweeted this to Danielle a couple days ago. Episode 10 was flat out stellar. After two exposition heavy episodes, this was the one that kicked everything into high gear for the push to the season finale. That shootout scene was amazing and brilliantly choreographed. I could not agree more. I loved that episode so much.
I did. Yeah, that episode last week was really intense, and I love the dichotomy of, like I said, Leto and Wolfgang, as you know, them getting Danny back, and then the shootout, and then them getting Danny back was beautiful, and Hernando's back to be smart and pretty and helpful and wonderful, so that's exciting.
Lovely. Natalie, do you want to take this other tweet from This Is the Queer Place?
Yeah.
If you did that first one.
My favorite moment was when Will was watching the fireworks with his dad, and Son and Caffius showed up to watch with him with all the strangeness of their new lives. It's these simple moments of connection that show how wondrous being a sensate can be.
Yeah. They all love fireworks. It's such a nice, quiet moment with all of them. And Caitlin, do you want to get this last tweet?
Sure. Andre at @hey_it's_Andre says, I loved Will and Jonas's conversation in the museum, especially when they were talking about clear-cut allegiances and what it means to be human. There are so many layers there. Wolfgang killing his cousin was also a godsend. I could not stand his cousin. Amen.
Okay. He's got a better cousin now. He's got Will. That's fine.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, man.
When are they all going to have a party where they all bring their weird friends to come and meet each other, like, Caffius and, Jella and Felix, and imagine Felix meaning Amanita, because I feel like she would punch him in the face for the things that, like, he says that are normal to him. Even though I like both of them very much, I would like Amanita to punch Felix in the face.
Full stop.
Just for fun, you know.
Just for funsies.
Yeah,
that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, just in terms of the mix of different people.
Yes, I hashtag no comment on that one. But thank you, everybody, for your feedback. And please do keep sending us how you feel about these episodes and about our conversations, because we love talking to you and hearing your opinions as well. But that's about it for this episode. But before we go, I do want to hear... Fisher's forecasts and Caitlin's conjectures for Sense8 season 1 episode 12, I Can't Leave Her, which is also our season finale. So you guys, please take it away. What do you think's going to happen?
I don't know. Caitlin?
Well, obviously that could have to do with Will and Riley.
Yeah.
Also probably Wolfgang and Kala.
I thought we might get a big flashback to the situation of Jonas and Angelica. That we might get a few big answers about the birth of the cluster. But Will and Riley was my instinct. I assume it's going to end on a very big cliffhanger, but I don't know. Outside of that, I'm not sure. I really hope that some of them meet in person now. Have any of them met in reality, in the real physical world, by getting on a plane and seeing each other? No. I would like that to happen.
This far, no, they have not. Okay. Well, I guess we're just going to have to watch that season finale and find out what happens then, which I am very excited about, and I'm excited to hear what you guys have to say and what all of our listeners have to say as well. Mm-hmm. So please come join us next time as we talk about episode 12, I Can't Leave Her. But until then, I am Danielle.
I'm Natalie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And we'll talk to you later. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
I did. Oh my God, Netflix, stop. Sorry, I don't know if that made noise out loud or not. Netflix just started doing something very strange.
No, I didn't hear anything.
Oh, good. Well, you just have me yelling.
Cool.